The county's number one talk show, the 9 till noon show on Highland Radio.
And now it's time for the talk of the Northwest, the 9 to noon show with Greg Hughes on Highland Radio.
Hello, 4 minutes past nine. A very good morning to you on this Thursday, the 6th of July, 2023. You're welcome along to another edition of your 9 till noon show, and plenty to keep you informed, entertained. We've got some live music a little later on and lots more besides, as you know yourself. We'll keep you across all the big stories of the day. But we're here for you too if you wish to raise your concerns, your issues, pass on some news, some good news, an act of kindness, something that's positive in your life. We're more than welcoming of such information as well. But how do you get in touch? Well, I tell you every morning, and I'm going to do it again today. You WhatsApp or text 086 60 25000, 086 60 25000. Now, if you're outside the Republic of Ireland, 00353 86 60 25000. Caroline and Niamh taking your calls this morning, 07491 25000. Again, if you're outside the Republic, 00353 74 91 25000, and emails from wherever you are to comments at highlandradio.com. Thursday morning's a bumper morning for newspapers. Let's start with the Tyrconnell Tribune. Letterkenny draft plan now in mothballs. That's according to a leading member of Donegal County Council, who says the changes proposed by the Office of the Planning Regulator are not acceptable and will not be addressed in the council chamber because June's local elections next year are just around the corner. Councillor Michael McBride says there is no appetite to reduce zoned lands by half, to reduce housing projections by thousands of units, or to implement flood mitigation proposals that would reduce the value of land, some of it right in the heart of the town. He said that there were about 20 meetings in all to find a way forward, and there has been no real progress. Asked if the OPR may take back control of the plan, Councillor McBride said there is a very real possibility of that happening, especially when no progress has been made at the many meetings of the council in the past 4 months. Detailed coverage of that on the front of and inside the Tyrconnell Tribune. The Donegal Democrat tells us that arrests are imminent over Sleeve League death. Gardaí are closing in on the arrest of chief suspects following the death of a man in southwest Donegal. The man whose body was found in the water off Sleeve League on Monday was due to stand trial from smuggling over €6.6 million worth of drugs. It's now likely that the investigation will be upgraded to a murder inquiry after the badly beaten body was recovered in the early hours of Monday morning, following a week-long search operation. While Gardaí have officially referred to the matter as a serious assault, a source told Donegal Live that the resources assigned to the case are consistent with a murder probe. Just to remind you, two suspects have been identified in a case that has brought a dark cloud over the scenic tourist hotspot. Gardaí, who have remained tight-lipped, have been keen to build an extensive dossier. And while it may not be, while it was not expected that any update would be forthcoming before Thursday morning, sources say that arrests were imminent. The Donegal News this morning, Gardaí will meet business leaders in Letterkenny tomorrow to discuss growing fears over violent crime in the town. Traders have called for a greater Garda presence on the street following the widespread circulation of a video showing an alleged altercation involving knives in Letterkenny Courtyard shopping centre last Saturday. Reports of a man carrying baseball bats on the street in a recent separate incident have also heightened fears of growing violent crime and the need for resources to prevent it. And I don't want to add any fuel to the fire, but speaking to people from outside Letterkenny that might be inclined to go into it, and we might as well have the conversations that we're having privately out in front, some say they do not feel they don't feel as safe as they once did, perhaps even during the day, walking through Letterkenny. Now, I'm not saying that's the case. I'm not saying it's what I feel. I'm just telling you it's what people have said to me. Is that something that you feel, or you're a business person that believes there needs to be a greater Garda presence to move people along? Maybe a lot of sometimes I was through the town not so long ago and had to step out into the road a couple of times with groups of people gathered around the place. I don't know. Does that? It doesn't bother me particularly, but does that create a certain sort of a feeling or vibe? I don't know. If you've got feelings on that, let me know. 086 60 25000. Well, a meeting will take place tomorrow between Gardaí and representatives of Letterkenny Chamber of Commerce to discuss growing concerns. The Chief Executive Officer of Letterkenny Chamber, Tony Forrester, said the Chamber has long been calling for extra guard presence on the streets of the town. And I think for reassurance, it would do no harm, at least for a period, to have a visible policing presence just to make people feel secure. Things can change really quite rapidly in a place, you know, in terms of what might happen into the future. As I say, if that's something you have a feeling on or something you want to get involved in, 086 60 25000. The Derry News this morning. A visitor to Derry has thanked the Good Samaritan, who went well above and beyond for himself and his friend during their recent holiday in the city. Dean Campbell, who's from South Yorkshire, contacted Donegal News to highlight the unforgettable kindness shown to him and his friend by the landlady of their B&B following an incident which happened during their stay. You can read more about that nice story. Has a nice conclusion in terms of Mr. Campbell's thankfulness. That's on the front of it inside the Derry News this morning. The Farmers' Journal, their lead today. Demand for land is expected to go into overdrive as the European Commission looks set to reduce the maximum stocking rate for nitrates derogation farmers from the 1st of January next year. An environmental protection agency report has indicated that most of the country will be subject to a new maximum stocking rate of 220 kilograms of organic NHA, despite protests from across the industry that the move will have no significant effect on water quality. There was another appearance before an Oireachtas committee yesterday of the RTE team. And plenty came out of. We'll speak to someone who was questioning them a little later on in the programme. I don't think there was any major punches landed. I'm kind of at the point now at this stage that nothing surprises me, nothing shocks me, and I found my interest waning as I watched some of it yesterday. I was able to make time to do so. The bottom line is it they need a root and branch clear out of the people who make decisions. The executive board, I think they're called, it's a confusing structure that you have. They're on total salaries of 2.1 million per year. They clearly don't know what's going on, and they need to move along and let other people in that can do the job. And also what they do need to get rid of there is this two-tier culture where you've got obviously the elites making an absolute fortune, and then you have regular workers, the vast majority of workers, who are, like everybody else, struggling to pay their mortgages, struggling to pay for cars, perhaps in the job because they love it, but not necessarily getting the money they might be able to get elsewhere. That's the majority of the RTE staff, but it is those at the very top that seem to be living in some different world, not only from the rest of the staff, but from the rest of the country as well. That's kind of, and I picked this part of the story out, that's, I'm not too... The Toy Story, the musical thing, I mean, it's all over the papers today. Look, at part of their remit is to try and diversify. Their income from sales is dropping all the time, you know, from adverts. They have a big machine there. I don't really see a problem with trying to organise a show. There was quite a bit they did wrong with it, but, I mean, you can't stifle creativity either or discourage it, can you? I mean, it was crazy what went on and how it went on, but that's, is that a scandal? I don't know if they'd have pulled in 5 million off their 2 million investment, it would be plus 3 million. Clearly it wasn't, and some mistakes were made. But I think stuff like this is more indicative of what the problem is that was a bad decision. Was it corrupt or was it, I don't know. No, it would be my feeling in terms of Toy Show the musical. I think it's ridiculous that they're funding that kind of stuff, but they are charged with that. That is their remit, to try and diversify the income. But anyway, this is the more sort of the reality of the situation if you're within RTE, and you can't really speak out either. A senior RTE reporter was forced to do live on-air interviews from cafe toilets in London. Well, I don't know if she was doing interviews. I think she was recording the voiceovers rather than interviews. But anyway... A senior RTE reporter was forced to do live on-air interviews from CAF toilets in London at the same time as the broadcaster was paying thousands of euro a year for membership of a private members club there. The revelation came after another day of shocking statements from RTE bosses who are now split over the management of the organisation. RTE's chair wrote to Interim Director General Adrian Lynch hours before an Oireachtas committee hearing outlining her inability to express confidence in the executive board. She's the head of the board, which is a different group of individuals. Well, late on Tuesday night, she privately warned of the board's deep unhappiness with the people responsible for the day-to-day running of the station. So while obviously those involved in sales were able to enjoy lavish lifestyles, days out, you know, access to different types of things, the regular workers were struggling. Radio stations were being shut down. Camera equipment was faulty. People who were looking to report from the regions weren't able to get camera crews. But at the same time, staff, executive staff members and their partners were able to wine and dine at rugby events and what have you. So that's that. Right, okay, the Irish Times this morning tells us that all maternity hospitals are expected to be able to provide abortion services by early next year, Minister for Health Stephen Donnelly has said. Mr Donnelly said it had to be ensured each services, such services, are available around the country. The Minister was speaking in the Dáil yesterday as the Health Termination of Pregnancy Services Safe Access Zones Bill 2023 was being debated at second stage. The proposed legislation would prohibit anti-abortion protests within 100 metres of any facility that could be providing access to terminations. What do you think about that decision? I mean, there are some that are fighting for the right to protest outside places where such services are provided. I'm not really quite sure what that achieves when someone has made a decision that they believe to be a healthcare decision. 100 metres is not terribly far away either, but obviously this has become a tipping point in terms of conversation. Well, Mr Donnelly said it was his intention that by early 2024, all 19 maternity hospitals would provide abortion services. Now, I don't believe those services are currently available at Letterkenny University Hospital. I'm open to correction on that, but I don't believe they are. The minister is saying that they should be available there by January the 1st of next year. A horrendous story and a horrendous experience for the victim of this awful, awful crime. This is in the Irish Daily Mail. A man has been jailed for a minimum of 18 years for murdering his wife by setting her alight in a car after throwing petrol over her. Thomas Rainey, 61, of Quarry Road in Knocklochtrim, County Derry, had pleaded guilty to the murder of his wife, Katrina Rainey, 53, in October 2021. Judge John O'Hara delivered the sentence yesterday at Belfast Crown Court and said that given the horror of what he did to his wife, it was the least he deserved. Now, he's 61, 18, 69, 79. So some might feel that's too lenient. I mean, it is, I don't think it's any problem commenting on it, but to put someone who was much younger, obviously, in their early 50s with much of their life ahead of them, to pour petrol over them, to set them alight, the horror of that experience for the person who eventually passed away, 18 years to me, seems light. Now, I think the judge made a comment that given the person's age, it is effectively, it's effectively not a life sentence. They didn't say that. But anyway, I just don't think it sends a very strong message. I don't really care what age the defendant is. I don't think that really matters. I think if you do this type of thing, just 18 years just doesn't seem right to me. The incident occurred at the family home where Ms. Rainey was leaving for work and her husband opened her car door, covered her with petrol and set her on fire. A mother of six, Ms. Rainey was still alive and being attended to by her children who were covering her with wet towels when emergency services arrived. Ms. Rainey was able to relay details of the attack to emergency services, some of which was captured on police body cam. You know, again, it is horrific, not only for that lady, but for her family that had to go through that. And regardless of the ins and outs of the defendant, what kind of a message does that send, I wonder? Okay, single vapes to go up in smoke. A ban on single-use vapes is needed to help reduce damage to the environment, a TD has claimed. This is in The Sun. Recent research has found that 1 in 10, or 500,000 Irish adults, now claim to use e-cigarettes, while use among children is at an all-time high. Disposable vapes were also included as a litter type for the first time in Irish Business Against Litter's latest nationwide survey having been found at over 6% of the testing sites. A quickie really for you. Do you think single-use vapes, even if you use them perhaps, should be banned? Let us know. 086 60 25,000. The Mirror, more than 1,700 people have been driving with only a learner permit for the last 30 years. Now, I did know people, and I can say it because sadly they're no longer here, that drove perpetually on learner permits. Now, this was really before it became, do you know what, how certain things were more acceptable and then there was a big crackdown? But it doesn't surprise me that 1,700 people are battering away on a provisional license for three decades. In total, there are currently 301,000 with learner permits to drive cars. You're not allowed to apply for a third or subsequent one unless you have taken and failed a driving test in the previous 2 years or have made an application for the exam. Now, there is a problem because there are people who apply for a driving test and it's so hard to get a driving test at the moment. And I feel so much, and I know about this myself, you know, young people working hard, 18, 19, 20, 21, 22, doesn't matter what age they are actually, really, whenever they come to driving. And they're applying for their test and they're waiting for months and months and months on end, routinely checking their emails every day to say, is today the day I'm going to be invited for my test? And then you have a situation, and I've raised this before in the past, whereby you can apply for a driving exam. Say you want to just stay in a provisional license or you just want to hold on to it as a form of ID, or you know, you might just choose to drive on it even though it's illegal. But if you apply for a test and then don't turn up, that qualifies you for an extension of your learner permit. Now, I don't think that should be the case. I think you should have to sit the exam before you get that extension. Now, if there's 301,000 people with learner permits, how many of those are just applying for tests and never going to take them to retain that license? I just think you should have to at least sit the test because it should free up some spaces, 1,000, 2,000, 3,000 spaces for young people who need their cars, and not just young people, to get to work and live their lives. It's terrible, really. Over 11,700 people have been driving with one for at least 20 years, with 1,701, as I mentioned, for over 30 years. And finally, 202 drivers that had a learner permit for at least 36 years. Are you one of them? Let us know why. Just, you know, you don't have to give your name or anything. I'm not judging anyone. I will judge people in that. I do think, it's not judging, but I do think you should have to sit the test to extend continue to hold a provisional license. And it's mostly, I wouldn't really feel it as much if everyone was able to get a test in a reasonable amount of time. Okay, so if you're looking, this is finally in the Star, if you're looking to get out of paying your TV license, some people might Google, well, how do I avoid paying my TV license? Well, who come out on top, would you believe? It's Cavan. They've topped the list of counties in Ireland where people search for ways to avoid paying their TV license. Amid the ongoing RTE payment scandal, there has been much debate about the national broadcaster's spending and where the money from your TV license fee actually goes. Well, the TV license is required by law for anyone who owns a television in their home and costs €160 a year. If you don't pay it, it can land you in court with a fine of up to €1,000. However, some households may be exempt. There are certain conditions to fulfil that legally, that legally allow you to skip out of paying the TV licence fee, such as qualifying for the household benefits package. Well, new data gathered from Google searches shows that Cavan is the county that searched the most for information on how to avoid paying the TV licence. The second highest was Westmeath, followed by Dublin in third, and then Limerick, Kilkenny and Kildare. We're not in that list. And I just wonder, is it the case that we don't have to Google it? Because maybe a lot of you out there don't pay it anyway. You've already figured it out. Maybe that's why we're not in the top five or six. We say good morning now to Labour Senator Marie Sherlock, who's a member of the Oireachtas Media Committee and was amongst representatives questioning the heads at RTE again yesterday for a third time. Good morning to you, Marie. Thanks for your time again today.
Good morning, Greg. Good morning to all your listeners.
Right. What is your assessment from yesterday? I mean, what we have learned, and there was a lot of spoilers the night before, and I suppose on the morning ahead of the committee meeting, is that there is more information coming out. And unless you seem to ask a direct question that actually hits on a point that they must answer, you're not going to hear about it.
Yeah, and I think that's been the extremely frustrating situation now over the past week, that we've had to ask questions two or three or even more times to try and get direct answers. I think, to be fair, I think the RT executive were a lot more forthcoming yesterday, but I think Ashuni Rahalig did say, you know, there is more to come. There's more bodies it's an unfortunate phrase, but certainly there's certainly more, you know, there's more information to come out. And I think a colleague used the phrase yesterday, we have two RTEs now. I think on one side, at a time where, during the pandemic, hundreds of thousands of people out of work in this country, not quite sure when they would be getting a decent income again. And Ryan Tubridy gets a letter of guarantee effectively saying he will not have be asked for a pay reduction for the next 5 years. So that was in the middle of 2020. And just 7 months later, RT staff were then asked to take a pay cut. And certainly for the hundreds of RT staff who go in, day out, to, you know, undertake public service broadcasting to the highest standard, I think it's a real kick in the teeth in terms of what we've learned, what we've learned over the past week and a half. I think, you know, Emma O'Kelly, who's chair of the NUJ branch, was talking about Fiona Mitchell, the London correspondent, having to, record in the toilets of cafes in London during Brexit. And yet the commercial side of RTE was spending what we would consider extravagant sums.
The argument was made. The argument was, I beg your pardon, Murray. The argument was made, though, that, you know, they're talking about 180 million euro worth of ad revenue. And whether we like it or not, wining and dining these companies or their agents is part of it, you know. And if they're delivering, you know, tens of millions of euro, and as I say, you know, News Talk or any other radio or TV station may be at the same crack. It's not necessarily is it that that's actually happening. It's the fact that then you have the rank and file having to record in toilets.
Yeah, look, I think, and I've spoken to quite a number of, I suppose, media outlets over the past number of weeks to understand more about how the commercial side works. And it is a reality, as we understand, that like in order to attract new clients, to retain clients, that wining and dining culture exists. But we have to think this is RTE we're talking about here. It's the national broadcaster. Yes, it relies on 43%, you know, relies on commercial revenue for 43% of its overall income, which is a massive amount of a massive reliance or over-reliance on commercial income. But, you know, I think most companies would be looking to advertise with RT because they're you know, broadcasting to the biggest audience in the country. So I think the question has to be asked, did RT really have to spend those sort of monies to retain those clients? I think, you know, many people would say Geraldine O'Leary, you know, was doing her job, and she was. But I think but spending those sums. And I think certainly like the trip to the Rugby World Cup in Japan, the extravagances with regards to the parties that were, you know, I suppose, organized. We heard about the flip flops and the balloons yesterday. Soho, the Soho Club in London. You know, I think there's wining and dining, and then there's bringing it to a whole new level.
Right. So, Marie, like what we have at this point, I think we kind of know everything. I mean, we might get little shocking details like the flip flops and stuff, but we know that the vast majority of people that work in RTE work well, and many of them are on modest incomes. Then there is another tier of people, the top talent in inverted commas, the people who really are using their jobs in RTE as a platform to make money elsewhere, contractors, okay? And then you have the very, very top earners who are on ridiculous money because apparently the BBC and CNN's just waiting to swoop in and pick them up as talent. And then you have, of course, in charge of that, an executive board on circa 2.1 million between them. Only a small group of people that really don't even know how the organisation is being run. And then we've got this funding model, right? So I think we know everything there. All the cards are on the table. Now, Ryan Tubridy will come in next week and we might find out that something or other, but it's not going to fundamentally change, I don't think, the nuts and bolts of where we are. So I'm not saying I want the story to go away or not necessarily, but what I'm saying is now we have to start talking about where do we go, how do we move forward? For the public, I don't think simply changing the executive board matters because in truth, the majority of us didn't know who they were, what they did, or we'll never hear about them again into the future. So we need something to change that we can see, because it's our doors that get knocked for the 160 euro. We need to see wages come down. We need to see, you know, this culture, this sort of celebrity culturally thing where, you know, certain companies are all intertwined with certain staff on 2FM and RT and all that kind of stuff. So what do you think needs to be done to get us through this and past it now? Because I think everything's out there now. There'll be a few shocks and what have you, but now we want to know is what happens next. Would you agree with that assessment, by the way? And what is your answer?
Yeah, no, I think you're right to a certain extent. I do think there are questions to be asked of Ryan Tuberty next week, but I think overall, you know, what we have now is an RT that is in disarray, and you know we've a deadly serious situation where you know RT relies on the license fee to be paid. And I suppose what is really sad about all of this is that there has been calls now for, like, notwithstanding this crisis, you know, RT needs investment. Particularly because of where broadcasting is at in the 21st century. And so this is where we made this appeal to Minister Martin during the week. We can't on one hand now say we need a review of RTE and pause any discussion about the money that goes into RTE, because, you know, we still have a situation where there's, you know, reporters, current affairs still left short. And so I think in the first instance, we have said to Catherine Martin that we need to have assurances that, you know, the staff who are going in there day in, day out to do their jobs are going to be fully supported this year, that they're not going to be left hanging. I think number two, that discussion about the future financing of RT needs to take place. The reality is that, as I said a few minutes ago, RT relies on commercial revenue for about 45% of its overall income. We understand when you look at public broadcasters in other EU member states that the average is less than 20%, somewhere around 18%. And so to me, there's an over-reliance on commercial income, and we need to look at how we actually improve state investment into it. And look, there's no easy answers here. I don't think, like I said, there's an, you know, A, should it be increased above the 160 euros? I think that would be a vicious pill for anybody to swallow. B, there's collection. You know, not every household pays it, of course. And you know, do we need to have a direct subvention from the government? I think all those things need to be thrashed out now, but in a way that we don't kick the can down the road, because that has been done for years. And yeah, you know,
I get you, Marie, but I would love people like you to sort of or to get into this a little bit. Like, say, for instance, the digital output from RTE. I mean, who is consuming it? How many people consume their digital output? And what that is effectively is when a DJ on 2FM or RTE sort of goes past their sell by date, they don't disappear off into the independent sector. They drift off into this digital landscape. What kind of salaries are these people on versus how many people are consuming this digital content? I mean, I can't even name the stations, but I know we've had Ronan Collins is going off to it. Dave Fanning is heading off to it. There's anyone who used to work for RTE, you know, when their time on air is over, they drift off into this digital landscape that we don't know how many people consume it, as I say. What kind of wages are they on? Again, and I'll say it again, why are we funding 2FM? What is the public service remit of 2FM? Where an awful lot of these
I think,
people,
Greg, can I just say, yeah. I think there's a serious issue with regards to broadcasters, and you touched on it earlier, using their programs, particularly in 2FM, to be able to draw attention and market their podcasts.
But what is the public But what is the public service delivery from 2FM or any of the digital channels, for example?
Well, look, I think those discussions need to take place, you know. But look, I think but the other thing is, you know, we've had, you know, there was a time where RT was talking about, you know, significantly downsizing Lyric FM. I know many people across the country might listen to Lyric FM every day, but they certainly switch over to it and, you know, at different times and hugely value it. So I think, look, we need to have that conversation in the round. I'm not going to be able to give you an answer here about what needs to be cut, because I don't think that, like, at the end of the day, we need a stronger and better RTE. And I know there are some that have an agenda that want to see a much smaller RTE. But I think what I would say is that, you know, RTE isn't just about current affairs. RTE is massively important for the arts and culture and music in this country and sport. And we need to think very carefully.
Okay, but just in terms of sport,
the national broadcaster is supporting all
of
those.
But in of course, Marie, but in terms of sport, last week, two of the quarterfinals of the GEA Football Championship were on pay-per-view.
Yeah, no, I'm opposed to the
GEA GEA
system. Yeah. Like, to be frank, right? Like, we either take the public service broadcasting remit seriously or we do not. Trying to make money off of it. And I think this is the lesson from the toy story. My own sense is that some persons within RTE kind of thought this is going to be a Riverdance moment. They'd be able to make a quick buck, go off into the sunset. And ultimately, you know, it failed, but it was a very expensive failure. And part and parcel of any artistic project is the problem, you know, that there's an element of risk and that has to be accepted. But there was vast sums of money spent in a very short turnaround. Like, it's a musical theatre can take normally a number of years to turn around as opposed to less than a year. And to put it in the convention centre, which if any of your listeners have ever been into, will know that it's a big cavern as opposed to a theatre. So so certainly, I think there are huge questions about how money has been spent.
Yeah.
And this comes back to the points that I was making last week. Ultimately, those at the top of RTE have not had that collective responsibility. There's a disarray amongst the executive, and unfortunately we need to see very serious reforms in order to reinstill public confidence in the national broadcaster.
Yeah, and very finally, just to run through what's on RTE1 at the moment, coming up very shortly is the Kelly Clarkson show, then it's Doctors, All Imports, then in the afternoon Home and Away, Shortland Street, Tastes Like Home, then EastEnders, then we have Shakespeare and Hathaway Private Investigators, another import, a rerun of some of the Today highlights. And then it's on to EastEnders.
Right? We need to be very careful here. So you and I might necessarily be looking at television during the day, but when I think of my own parents, or, well, they don't necessarily be looking at television, but there's a lot of elderly people or people maybe that, you know, aren't working or are not out and about who rely on daytime television. And I think they're the experts as to, you know, how good or bad the schedule is during the day. I'm certainly no expert in that.
All right.
Other than children's television. Well,
I'll get your parents on then.
That's it.
All right.
Anyway,
all right, take care.
If the Donegal accents could understand the Cork accents, I think that'd be the challenge. But anyway,
have a lovely one. Take care. Senator Marie Sherlock of the Labour Party there, member of the Oireachtas Media Committee. If you have any insight into that, 08660 25000 00 35386 60 25000. Okay, so whilst one committee room yesterday was occupied by the RTE issue, a much more serious issue, a real-life issue that affects people in a much more serious way, certainly in this part of the world, was being raised in another committee room. We're going to hear about that now, as we're joined by Roisin Gallagher, founder of the Redress Focus Group. Thank you for joining us, Roisin.
Hi, Greg. Thanks for having me on.
Right, OK. So defective concrete home owners from the Banking Insurance Redress Focus Group made a presentation to the Oireachtas Finance Committee. So can you give us the an outline of what was discussed?
Well, the Banking and Insurance Focus Group kind of got together over the course of February and March. As you know, we only started the Redress Focus Groups back in January. So it was a very young initiative, and the guys got together in February and March, which... Between then and now, they have met, they've managed to meet with the major or the senior management of the major banks.
Mm-hmm.
So Bank of Ireland, Permanent TSB, AIB, they met with the Bank Confederation of Ireland. And then yesterday, and they met with the Minister of Finance last week or the week before. And yesterday was the joint committee meeting at the Oireachtas. So that was with the finance department, public expenditure and Taoiseach. So yesterday they kind of talked about where the government could come in and where would they play their part in getting the banks, dealing with the banks, working together and trying to come up with solutions for homeowners, which are basically trying to deal with the shortfalls of the enhanced scheme.
And what was some of the most important points made at that and the response to them, Roisin?
Well, it was, as we heard, they were excellent. They did so well at it, trying to bring up the points of 0% finance bridging loans, where people that have to come up with finance themselves while their build is ongoing, that the banks would step in there and pay for that, fund that, essentially at 0% interest. They're also talking about the fact that, you know, people who wouldn't normally fall under, who wouldn't meet normal lending criteria, that they would be accommodated as well. So OAPs, people that are unemployed, you know, that kind of thing.
And I suppose it's, we know the points up here because we discuss it all the time. I suppose it's really how these concerns were responded to and if they were taken on board or not.
Previously to this?
Yeah, no, during the process yesterday. You know, like, what might come from this? Was there anything said to the likes of Patrick Sharkey, Sean McCabe, Donna McDade, Sarah Shovlin, that could give us any hope for the future? Or is this really just about airing the concerns and getting them on the record?
Well, everything is on the record, as you say, and as we heard from the representatives there yesterday, they are committed, they have committed to working with the focus group and getting the central bank to the table as well to figure out bespoke products that will help this very different and unique situation. So I think they are very positive of the outcome. I mean, nothing is set in steel, and nobody wants to give any promises of anything happening that hasn't happened yet. But everything is looking optimistic, and I think the timing was very good after the enhanced scheme coming out being pretty negative. People needed a bit of hope, and I think if they watch back that replay, I think they will find that hope within that.
Yeah, because I'm slightly disadvantaged. I didn't know it was on yesterday, but it is available and we'll link it. It is available for anyone to watch back. And I look forward to sort of, you know, going through that yesterday. As I say, I didn't know it was coming up.
I might be a bit of a nerd on this because I watched it twice then. But I have to mention that Grant Marsh has done an amazing job. He broke down this I think it's almost 2.5 hours long. He broke it up into about 126 clips. And he described what each clip is and pointed out which clip, who's speaking in each clip. So it's very user-friendly. That link is now all over Facebook and Twitter.
It is amazing he turned that around as quickly. That it's available there now.
I know that Grant worked really hard last night on that. He is backstory.ie on Facebook and Twitter. So he really deserves recognition. He's doing that all voluntary to document the crisis for us. Now, Grant is from Cork, so we have to really be appreciative for all the work that he does. So what I'm trying to say about the video is, although we will get the people from the banking group on to you and they'll be able to give you more details of the financial aspects of this, I do think it's really important for absolutely every homeowner, everybody that thinks they might be affected, even if you're not affected and you live in this area, anybody who's a stakeholder, anybody who's helping people through this crisis, any volunteers, to watch that video from yesterday. Do you watch it? It's so educational. It's so informative. They talk about lots of different situations. And also Don McDade gave a very good explainer, a breakdown of her situation in terms of the finances and the shortfalls. So it's very informative. I really recommend everybody to watch it.
Yeah, backstory.ie but you can find it on YouTube. Just if you search FinanceCom Banking Redress Focus Group, it just pops up straight away. I mean, we saw yesterday in the other committee room, we saw senators, TDs clamouring to get questions in and to get their sound bites as it relates to, of all different political backgrounds, of course, on the RTE issue. Was there the same urgency for, well, our local representatives, I suppose, to be present or have a say in the committee meeting yesterday?
No, we had Joe McHugh in there yesterday in the committee meeting. He spoke near the end of it. We had no interaction at all. The bank and insurance focus group representatives that were there, Donna, Sarah, Patrick and Sean, nobody came up and talked to them or met them or spoke to them. But, you know, Mr. McConlogue was next door. He was in the building, but he didn't want to speak to them, or he didn't want to acknowledge them or welcome them to the Dáil. So it's very interesting. I find it extremely confusing. Why is there such a circus around the RTE debacle? But when we're talking about a 2.8, I think it is. Some people are saying 2.2. I think it's 2.8 billion. Scheme, why have we been completely ignored? We haven't been picked up by RTE or any of the major media, national media outlets. I don't understand it. People's priorities seem to be in different places.
Yeah, but if the truth be told, even if you look through the government's social media and to a lesser extent the opposition's social media, there's not much talk about it there either. So it's not really capturing the imagination of the media as such, but it doesn't actually seem to be catching the imagination of those that announced it.
No, not even them. And I mean, for not to be able to come on to your show or local radio, the main radio station, the main radio show in our country, and for Charlie McConlogue to send that text message to you and make this a personal thing to you as well, Greg. I really just find it all very bizarre.
It's not about me. It's about people.
So he'll talk to Donald, but he won't talk to you, Greg. I think he's Mickey.
Yeah, I know, but it's really about people's houses I've spoken to so many people through this in tears, struggling. I don't care about my feelings, and I appreciate your comments. Don't get me wrong, Roisin, but I want to speak to these people to try, and we all could work together to come up with a solution to this. This is the biggest crisis ever in Donegal. I don't think there's anything that can match it. We don't even know where it's going yet. People have taken their lives over this issue. Relationships have been broken up. Children are going to be scarred by this for the rest of their lives. If Minister McConlogue, he can do whatever he likes as it relates to me personally. I don't care, because the issue here is the people and what they're going through, and that is what's horrendous. And I look forward to speaking in more detail. And listen, fair play for the establishment of these focus groups. I think it's been really a critical and pivotal part of this conversation. And I look forward to speaking to some of those when they're available. They weren't available this morning, just to tease it out a little bit more. But Roisin, for the very point you mentioned as it relates to the coverage of the RTE story, I wanted to invite you on so that we recognise this can happen, direct people to this important video, and as I say, we'll tease out these issues more down the line. Is that all right, Roisin?
Thank you very much, Greg. Thank you. And thanks to everybody for the support of the Redress Focus Groups as well. Being such a young initiative, it's been amazing to see. It's got such potential, and I want people to feel hopeful and come forward and feel like they can be part of the Redress Focus Groups so they can take power in their own situations. And this is what happens when we make change happen together. You know, we come together and we work together, and things can actually happen. So that's the message, really.
Yeah, exactly. And I think we have to sort of take control of this of ourselves, don't we? We can't necessarily rely on the elites, let me put it like that, to do it. All right, listen, thank you again. Thank you very much for your time. Thanks for giving us an outline of that. And thanks for directing us in the backstory.ie. I think it reduces it into bite-size, contextualized clips, which I think is amazing that it was turned around so quickly. All right, have a lovely day, Roisin. Take care of yourself.
You too,
bye.
So
Roisin Gallagher, founder of the Redress Focus Group, 086 60 25 000. That's the WhatsApp and text number, 086 60 25 000. Okay, Doug, we have an opportunity now to read some of your comments. A caller says, people should have the choice to subscribe to RTE if they want it. I don't pay a TV licence. I don't want to watch RTE or listen to their propaganda. Your list of TV programmes on today just confirmed to me that I'm missing nothing, really. I think the problem is though, if it became a subscription-only service, it couldn't survive. I think there has to be a compulsion there. And you do see that with state broadcast media right around the place, that there has to be a compulsion to pay for it because they can't compete with Amazon, Netflix, Disney, so on and so forth. Greg, RTE HQ should be moved out of D4 to, say, Athlone. The top 10 presenters should also be dropped. There's plenty of young talent out there. Some of the top presenters are great. It's just, I mean, in this day and age when we have so many people who can't afford to feed themselves, when you get people being paid 550,000 odd euro for doing an hour a day, it's just not fair. I don't think anyone, the presenters are, it's not mine necessarily. I listen to some of them, don't listen to others. That's fine. That's the way radio works. Some people listen to this show, others don't, and so on and so forth. But it's just it's this gap between these people and the rest of society. Quick question. Can you ask where or who can give a BCA certificate? I can't find an engineer or architect. The ones I talk to say they have to update accreditation. One step forward, two steps back. So anyone out there know where one could get a BCA certificate? Hi, Greg. Why would anyone pay their TV license after all the scandal coming out? I won't be paying mine. They can buy their own flip-flops, or at least buy cheaper flip-flops. I don't know where they're getting the flip-flops, but 25 euro for a pair of flip-flops seems quite excessive. Good morning, Greg. Can you please ask if someone could cut the hedges on the Dromahol Road? This is a very narrow road and is extremely dangerous at the moment, with hedges almost out onto the road. It's also the same road to Dromahol Chapel. I don't cut hedges as such. I know you're not asking me to do it, but in terms of, I'm not sure, is it allowed at the moment? Can you cut hedges at the moment? I think in any case, regardless of the time of the year, if it's a dangerous situation like a junction or a road or something, I do believe that the council can actually still cut hedges if it's in the interest of road safety. A caller says the whole RTE situation is a joke. We could watch Prince Charles's coronation, no bother, but not the quarterfinals of our national sport, which is an interesting and factual statement. Would this have come out if Ryan did not step down? Well, did he step down because this was coming out? You know what I mean? If you look at the timelines, he knew what was coming. Right, okay. Let us take a break. We'll be back with more in the 9 till noon show after we take a break, as I mentioned, for the news and obituary notices.